Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Person of the Pnei Yeshua. If you're in yeshiva and you don't know who I'm talking about, shame on you. But there are a lot of people that are not in yeshivas and they're not so familiar with the Pnei Yeshua. He's a very interesting person. People know him from the books, but obviously very few know him from the history. The Pnei Yeshua, for those who don't know, was a big rabbi in the 1700s. Well, that doesn't do a lot for people. But he was a classic rabbi of the old school, the type that doesn't exist today, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. Nowadays, a rabbi is a rabbi of a shul, something like that, and he gives classes, and he makes speeches, and sermons, and speaks at bar mitzvahs, and brises, and visits the sick, and goes to funerals, all that kind of business. Forget that. In the old days, for many, many centuries, it's not what a rav was, and how beis din they used to call him. He used to be a rabbi of a community, not of a single synagogue, of a whole kehillah, small or large. And the job description was, you preside over the local beis din, which actually runs by itself most of the time, and paskin the hard shailos. Plus, you sit and learn. You say, why would people pay somebody to come sit and learn? Our grandparents lived in a different world, and they thought that's a big deal. And when the person just sits and learns, he obviously they only want somebody who's that type. And it was understood that the best learning is with a yeshiva, and so the community, when they hired the rabbi, usually would say, we'll spring for a little yeshiva of 10, 15 guys, 20 guys maybe, and if you can raise money for others, that's you're on your own. And so every basin of the old school, or most of them anyway, wore two hats. They were rabbi of a community in which they, like I said before, they paskin chilas and sat in basins and all that sort of thing. They didn't give speeches really, and they certainly didn't visit life cycle events. But on the same time, there was some kind of a Rosh Yeshiva. So you're a rabbi and a Rosh Yeshiva. The yeshiva could be a small one, or if you were charismatic, you could attract many students. And that's how life was lived once upon a time. The Pnei Yeshua was one of those classic types. And in his capacity as a Rosh Yeshiva, he hit the big time because he wrote the famous four-volume work, The Pnei Yeshua, which really took off in the yeshiva world for many centuries. Not so much today, but it's still around and is widely used. And he's a very interesting personality because if you look at his biography, he was a rabbi in many places. When you see most of the time a biography of somebody who was a rabbi in many different communities, it means he was fired. And usually the reason a rabbi was fired is he wouldn't toe the line. But that means he wouldn't kiss up to the rich and the powerful in the community, and he called a spade, and the rich people and the powerful people in those kehillas would then get so angry that they would kick the guy out. Either formally or informally, but that's what would happen. And that is certainly what happened to Pnei Yeshua. Anytime he was in a town and he saw something that he thought wasn't right, he called it, and that was the end of him. So a very interesting type of personality. Why was he that type? In my opinion, it's because he was born to a rich and powerful family. In those days, the big rabbis, many of them came from elite families, in which there was a long tradition. The father, the grandfather were big Talmidei Chachamim. And they would put a lot of time and effort into making the young kids grow up, if they had it in them, to become big Talmidei Chachamim. And if the family played their cards right, either through business investments or through marriages or that sort of thing, they would have what they call Torah Gedul B'Makom Echad, meaning they'd be rich and they'd also be learned. And the Pnei Yeshua came from such a family in Krakow, born in 1681, I think it was, and he was 75 when he died, so that put him at 1756. And once you come in that kind of a family, you're not so overawed by the rich and the powerful. And indeed, he was married, I think, three times, and each time to rich and powerful family. In other words, he married a rich girl the first time, and then the second time, the third time. And therefore, at the end of the day, he did not need anybody financially. So if he told somebody what he thought of them and they kicked him out of town, big deal. He has the financial wherewithal behind him, and he can handle that. So that made him a cantankerous individual if you did something that was wrong, because he would not shut up and be quiet about it. Very interesting in that way. Now, specifically, in the case of Pnei Yeshua, he got married the first time when he was like 20 or something like that. And as I said, to a rich and powerful family, a great girl, and they had a child. And the family even sort of like bought him his own private yeshiva. And he was a gadol, so he was the real thing. And then came the famous story that many know about, or perhaps you don't know about it. The yeshiva had the misfortune of being located on the top of ammunition dump, a powder magazine. Or as he writes it, 100 barrels loaded with gunpowder. And in those days, there were a lot of fires because in Poland, this happened in Lemberg. In Poland and Eastern Europe in general, the one thing you have a lot of is wood. And so all buildings are made out of wood, and all you need is one Mrs. O'Leary's cow to turn over a lamp, and next thing you know, the whole place goes up. And if you're sitting on top of a powder magazine, as he writes himself in the introduction of Pnei Yeshua, he was sitting and learning with the students, and next thing you know, it was a gigantic explosion. His description matches exactly what we unfortunately hear about in Israel, but people who live through terrorist attack when a bomb goes off. He said it was a flash, and only later he heard the sound, and all his family was killed, and it was a terrible business. And as you can imagine, the building collapsed and killed people and fell upon him. And he made a famous vow: if you get me out of this, O Lord, I will devote myself to serious learning. Not like he wasn't doing serious learning beforehand, but you were talking to people at a high level. And so he said, I'll really learn. And as he writes, when the dust cleared, there was a miraculous path open for him among all the dead and the broken wood and the collapsed buildings. He got out, and he devoted himself to that, obviously. And therefore, he's a very interesting person. He then remarried a girl of similar type, and he went on to have a career. I can't go into all the details, even though they're all interesting. There's a lot of Lashon Hara involved also, because they were a lot of quarrels he was involved in. But he went from town to town as a rabbi here and a rabbi there, and eventually attained this very great reputation as one of the super lamdans, because that's what he was. And after a while, let's put it this way, he couldn't stay in Poland because there were too many fights. They moved to Germany, and he was a rabbi in all the big kahilas in Germany, in Berlin, and then in Metz, and then in Frankfurt. This is what you did if you were a big Talmud Chacham in Eastern Europe in the 18th century. The communities in Germany could pay bigger salaries, and the things seemed to be more stable there politically. And so people, many famous rabbis, the Noda Behuda, the Shaka Sarya, I mean, you name it, were all 18th century rabbis who moved from Poland to take positions in Germany, usually not in a happy way. And so the result is that he also had this kind of career in which he was in very distinguished kahilas, but like I say, he didn't last long because when he saw something he didn't like and he called it out, the leader of the kahila got real angry, and next thing you know, he was gone. He also got very heavily involved in the big fight that was going at that time about Rionis and Apshitz. We've all heard about the Emden Apshitz controversy. I imagine most of you know what I'm talking about when I speak about that, Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Rionis and Apshitz. But the truth of the matter is, it was really a Pnei Yeshua, Rionis and Apshitz controversy. The Pnei Yeshua was the main one who was accusing Rionis Apshitz of Sabbateanism, and he was very heavily involved in all this sort of business. And yet, even when he was thrown out of town, people held him in the very highest esteem. And in the last place in Frankfurt, where he was a rabbi for many years, he was at the same time very controversial, but also very highly regarded. I'm a Kohen, so it matters to me these kind of questions. He was involved in a very famous issue, well, it'll be famous in a minute anyway, about Kohanim in the Frankfurt ghetto, because the way the buildings used to be built in those days is it's all one long set of row houses. And those of you out there who are not Kohanim don't even have to know about this, but if there's a dead body in one building, you know, it might possibly be that everybody in all the row houses, if you're a Kohen, you have to leave. And just imagine, for example, such shilas have popped up. If someone dies on a Shabbos and they can't remove the body till after Shabbos, does that mean if I'm a Kohen, I have to leave the house and stand out in the cold, you know, for the next 24 hours or something like that? And he was very, very involved in finding a heter and a way around having to do with the sewage pipes in Frankfurt, which was a very controversial psak. He was not afraid of controversial psaks. So this is a very strong-minded individual and a very person of unbending rectitude, as we would say today. I would only have to go in a minute, so I would only point out a very famous story. The Chido, the famous Sephardic rabbi who lived at that time, was famous for making a tour of the Ashkenazic communities in Europe, among other places. because he was a shliach for the Jewish communities in Eretz Yisrael, raising money. That's how you did in those days. And he stopped in, not Frankfurt, but in Worms. And he stayed at the Pnei Yeshua's house. The reason it was Worms is because the Pnei Yeshua got involved in the Emden Abshus fight, and he called it the way he saw it, and one of the factions in the town didn't like him, and they forced him out, and he went, and he moved to another town called Worms, you know, where Rashi learned, and that's where the Pnei Yeshua met him. He was on wife number 3. The first wife was killed in the gun blast. The second wife died from an illness many years later in 1751, and this was the third wife, Gittel, and they weren't married that long, and they were both not young when they got married. And the Chidah records, they says that the Rav, the Pnei Yeshua, invited me to his house for Shabbos, and I came Friday night. It was unbelievable, he says. The food was unbelievable, and the Divrei Torah was even more unbelievable, and it was a constant flow. You can imagine two big Gedolim spending Friday night together, and they're talking, learning, and each one saying over something. And when the Pnei Yeshua said some Vard over, or, you know, some Dvar Torah, his wife, Mrs. Pnei Yeshua, who had been married with him only 5 years now, actually at that time a year or two, said, Doske Feldman, that's a good vort. And the Pnei Yeshua said to his guest, the Chidah, I said, see, because you, my finally, because here's the chus, my wife finally liked one of my Dvar Torahs. Usually she doesn't approve of them. Which shows you Gedolim are people too. There's a lot more to say on the subject, as there always is, but as I said, we're all in a hurry, at least I am, and so have a good day, and his neshama should be as a chus for everybody.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.